Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here. Dan Rubenstein, unfortunately, back over there.
Aw.
Blustery New York City. Daniel, how are you?
Yo. I'm good. I miss you, brother.
I miss you, too. It's weird.
We did a lot of shows together in very close proximity, and now that we are once again separated by the cruel mistress that is the Earth's geography, it's not as fun. I'm going to be honest with you. It's, you know, I know that was our original charming appeal, that we were across the country and had never met each other. It's way more fun in person, without shirts, in a jacuzzi at 2 a.m.
That was a long night of podcasting right there.
It was a long, sordid evening.
So folks, of course, are going to have to deal with us here talking a little longer.
Yeah.
In the beginning than usual about non-college football stuff. But what are your takeaways from the trip? Did you enjoy the trip? Did you enjoy the road trip to the BCS championship? Do you think we got a lot out of this?
Oh, we had a fantastic time.
Yeah.
Even if people didn't like the shows, which across the board, everybody seemed to, which is outstanding that everybody seemed to have a positive response. Yes, it was a terrific time. Glad you finally made it out to Southern California.
Yes.
Got to enjoy the sun and the fruits of our labor out there in LA and Newport Beach at the Media Hotel. Very good to see a lot of our friends that we've had on the show a ton do shows with Spencer Hall, Celebrity Hot Tub, Ryan Hot Tub, as it were. I had a fantastic time. It seemed like you did too. It's hard to tell sometimes because you're such a machine with the podcasting, but I saw a lot of smiles on that.
Well, you know, Bruce Feldman said I'm not charismatic.
Well, no. He said you weren't as charismatic as Uncle Nate.
I'm going to take that as him saying I wasn't charismatic.
I'm a
charismatic guy. I enjoy life. I'm fun to be around. I just, you know, I kind of get in that mode. And then it didn't help that I had the beginning part of a cold. And I had to do like that creepy, like, how are you today, Dan voice, every time
we
were interviewing people. So I was a little out of my element there, but I thought it went well. And it was great to see the Rubensteins in their element.
Yep.
In the West Valley of beautiful sunny Southern California.
Mm-hmm. No, everybody was glad to finally. My mom, when greeting you, when Jelly greeted you, the greeting was, I feel like I've known you for so long.
Yeah, it was like we've carried on an online relationship.
Right. But that went to a weird place. It was fantastic nonetheless. We had a great time. What was your favorite meal you had out there?
Oh, man, so much Mexican food.
A lot of tacos.
Not going to lie, the stomach's been feeling it.
Really?
For the last, like, week now.
Yeah.
You eat more Mexican in, like, 6 days than you do normally in 6 years. And there is a bit of a transition there in the intestinal tract. I'm not going to lie.
No, it happens. You go back to PA, you just don't eat as well. It happens.
Your mom made something, some breakfast entree that involved kind of like a dippy egg, kind of like a black bean dip and bread. What was that called?
It was, I don't know exactly what the proper term for. We in California, where the Rubensteins call it a bean boat. It's sort
bean
of
boat.
A torta
okay.
roll
yeah.
with a black bean spread on it and some Mexican cheese, some queso fresco, and then a fried egg on top. So you get the sort of...
Yeah.
The Mexican bean situation, you get the runny egg. It's great.
The bean boat, I'm very pro bean boat.
You were a fan of that.
I was a fan of the bean boat
throw
and
some
everything
salsa
else.
On there.
Yeah. Bean boat, very, very good, though.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I will pass that along.
All right. Well, we are back for those of you who have wondered. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, still the email. Also, feel free to hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, and on FanCred. Our plan now, I think, over the next 2 weeks anyway. Today, we're going to review all the news in the world of coaching in college football. As you know, I mean, we sort of alluded to some of the moves on our last show, talked a little bit about Charlie Strong to Texas, but there have been other ones, James Franklin to Penn State, Bobby Petrino now back to Louisville, not just head coaches, but also coordinators and assistants as well. We're going to get into that in a little more detail, talk through some of those moves. We're going to do that tonight. What we're going to do next week, probably the early part of next week, not Sunday as usual, because we want to watch the NFL games, but I think our plan is probably to record the Verbies in the early part of next week.
Yes.
I'll produce that up, and then we'll push that out maybe maybe late Wednesday, sometime later on Thursday, somewhere in the latter part of the week, so that people have a chance to listen to it over the span of the next week, and then we'll just go from there.
It's going to sound great, those verbies.
I'm excited. It's going to be fun.
A lot of hotly contested categories. I was surprised how close a lot of these were. A lot of these could have gone either way. Very excited to reveal the winners.
Also, a lot more votes than usual, which is as big a tell as ever that we had more downloads this year. Mm-hmm. But a ton of votes, a ton of interest in the verbies. People really get off on it. So,
yep.
All right, we'll put that out there in the next week or so. We should get to all the breaking news, shall we?
Do that.
All right. The first one in terms of a coaching move to come across the wire to break was this Charlie Strong to Texas move. Now, we can get into what we like and don't like about the Charlie Strong to Texas move in a little more detail here. What we do know, just on the surface, about a $5 million salary, a pretty nice pay increase for Mr. Strong as he goes from Louisville down to Austin, Texas. They had reportedly looked at a number of different folks. Ultimately, they settle on Charlie Strong. The two points that come to mind for me, really. First and foremost, Charlie Strong forever has defense at Florida and Teddy Bridgewater on his resume. Those two things working in tandem make him a very attractive hire for anybody.
Yep.
Secondly, on the other hand, Charlie Strong is now thrust into this situation where he has to do more media work than ever before. And there were some reports of his time at Louisville that may not have been his strongest suit. Right. So I ask you, Mr. Rubenstein, Charlie Strong to Texas, good fit, bad fit, get awkward in a hurry. Where do you stand on Charlie Strong?
I stand that it has the potential to be a very good situation because I think he should be able to recruit really well in the state of Texas. I feel like he has positioned himself as a coach with a reputation that should be very attractive to a number of top candidates because of the things you mentioned, his experience in the SEC, more specifically with a national championship program like Florida, and then Teddy Bridgewater. That's that big, bright, shining name that even though Charlie Strong is a defensive guy and did not necessarily develop Teddy Bridgewater every day at practice and turn him into the quarterback that he is today, that's something he can sell to people that happened within his program, that he's going to have presumably a top five-ish NFL draft pick, if not the best quarterback in this upcoming draft. So that's sort of a short-term thing. As for the program fit thing, I still, like you mentioned, I have concerns just because it's not even just the media thing. It's just all the extraneous stuff at Texas that he will have to deal with, whether it's boosters, whether it's the Longhorn Network, whether it's just the day in and day out grind of that kind of attention and just all of the hands he needs to shake and more media attention and more just general responsibilities. It's going to be an adjustment. I think he'll be all right, but it's not that home run in that sense that perhaps another candidate like James Franklin, like Jimbo Fisher even, or, you know, Nick Saban, you know, however real or unreal that actually was, would make it seem. So I'm sort of giving it B minus, wait and see. I really like the staff he's put together. They just announced that the offensive line / offensive coordinator is going to be Joe Wickline, who is calling plays. Comes over from Oklahoma State, where he put together a number of good, or helped and was involved with a number of good offenses. So the staff thing is going to be huge. I think he's going to be given quite a bit of power at Texas. And I think that's what sort of held up. He had a lot of leverage in this search. Texas obviously did not find either the first or second choice that they were looking for. Doesn't matter. Charlie Strong should have a pretty sweet deal in terms of what he has the ability to do. I think they're going to be good quickly. I think that staff, and he is a good enough coach to take advantage of the available talent. In the Big 12, there's no overwhelming force at the moment. Oklahoma looks to be trending upwards. But, I mean, shouldn't the Big 12 every year be Texas and Oklahoma on top? I mean, I don't see why not. So, I like the move. I'm not completely goo-goo-eyed like I am about some other moves that we've seen these past few years in college football, but willing to be optimistic at the moment.
Yeah, and it's not a bad hire because at Texas, you don't need necessarily the most attractive, the sexiest hire in the world to succeed. You just need a guy who can come in there, certainly a guy who can develop a defense.
Yes.
And that is something that Charlie Strong has been very good at over the span of his career. He did it at Florida. You would assume with him coming to Texas, with all that talent he's able to pull up from the great state of Texas, coordinating a defense, putting a better product on the field, at least defensively, should not be an issue for Strong. And of course, if they can get the offense playing a little bit better, it should be gravy. I think ultimately Texas will just benefit from a change in landscape. Mack Brown, for better or worse, had overstayed his welcome.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of folks who didn't like the way that whole thing played out. Guess what? It never plays out well when you've got someone in power for a long time, unless he retires on his own volition with really his own ideas in mind about when he wants to do it. It always kind of gets murky like this. So the circumstances under which Mack Brown left may not have been ideal, but Strong comes in now and he doesn't need to be great. He just needs to be good enough to bring the recruits in and hopefully get the momentum back in Texas's favor again. Charlie Strong, $5 million to go to Austin, Texas. That's a payday.
Sumlin money.
That is Sumlin money.
You remember the Farrelly Brothers movie, Stuck on You?
Yeah, of course.
You remember, so at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, where they do get separated but then decide they're better as a tandem because that's what they're used to doing, and they like tie a rope around each other. It'd be really nice if Charlie Strong could sort of attach a rope to Mack Brown and sort of they just exist back to back and tie together. Charlie Strong does the coaching and recruiting. Mack Brown does just handshake and boosters, just sort of kissing babies.
Yep.
That's the perfect Texas coach.
Well,
Mack Brown has nothing to do with the football product on the field. All Charlie Strong in that regard. But Charlie Strong doesn't have to do anything with external folks.
So then let me ask you this then, Dan.
Yeah.
It's a perfect segue into James Franklin.
Yes.
James Franklin hired to be Penn State's 16th head football coach.
Mm-hmm.
The news had trickled out, and then all at once it became a fact that he would be going to State College, getting about $4.5 million annually. I was surprised that Texas didn't make a stronger push for Franklin, or that we didn't hear more about James Franklin potentially landing at Texas, because he would seem to be both of the Charlie Strong and Mack Brown column from your little analogy there, right?
Yeah. No, it seems to be, it seemed to be, at least now that we can use it in the past tense, a situation where we'd think each side would be more interested. I don't know what James Franklin's interest was in Texas. I would have assumed he would have jumped on it. Don't know what Texas's holdup or what the holdup was, or if they just weren't interested. I don't know the behind the scenes. I don't know how much has come out behind the scenes, but it appeared that Texas, after Jimbo and Nick Saban, again, I am the furthest thing from a Texas insider. I do not know the process there yet. I'm sure more things will come out, or we'll hear more things.
Well, if Strong doesn't win, it's going to come out in a hurry. I root for Charlie Strong, but if something goes haywire, you're going to find out everything about that coaching search.
Yeah, and figure out what happened with Art Briles and how serious the mutual interest was in that regard, because I'm sure, Art Briles was very careful not to say, I'm definitely going to be the coach of Baylor next year.
Right.
He never said that during this process. He said, I'm a Baylor Bear in the present tense, but was very careful not to really use the future tense. So I feel like there was definitely interest. He just wanted to wait until after the Fiesta Bowl. So, yeah, James Franklin seemed like he would have been a terrific fit, could have recruited the hell out of Texas and taken that program to or returned that program to where it probably should have been in the first place. But Penn State got themselves a real good coach.
I'm not surprised, obviously, that they would offer the job to James Franklin.
Right.
I'm surprised he took it.
The Penn State job.
Yeah, I mean, I get he's from Pennsylvania. He's not from too far from here, from Langhorne. I was just in Langhorne this past weekend. He went to college about an hour from here, went and coached at Kutztown, about 45 minutes from where I'm at right now. I mean, he is an Eastern PA guy, and I get that you have roots, but the Penn State job, I'm not going to say it's toxic. It's not nearly as toxic as it was 2 years ago before Bill O'Brien stepped in there.
Right.
It's still, I don't think, as good a job as Texas.
No,
and this
it's
is coming from
a
Penn State alum. It's a good job, no doubt. I'm surprised he took it. I thought for sure he could get a better gig, or that maybe he'd wait to see if Florida or another job opens up at some point in the next couple of years. But I'm surprised he took the Penn State job. Now, with that said, with him at Penn State, I am all in. This is me motioning, pushing all the proverbial chips in the middle.
Sure.
With James Franklin, because this is as good a hire as we've seen in quite some time, mm-hmm. and probably, at least in my judgment, the best coaching hire we've seen all offseason.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I would put that and Chris Peterson to Washington.
Peterson, okay. I am remiss in leaving him off the list as well.
Yeah, I would say those two are the ones that inspired the most confidence in immediate and long-term success, given where the schools are and what they can do. You know, Penn State, there's a certain context that you have to keep with their immediate future anyway as a football program. But yes, those sure. two hires, you look and you're like, wow, good on them. Yeah, and one of the things that I find interesting, and I was a little bit surprised Franklin took this job, and I don't always subscribe to the fact like, oh, he's a Pennsylvania guy, or oh, he's a California guy, or oh, he's a Georgia guy. Like, some people hate where they grew up.
Yeah.
Some people are very happy to leave where they grew up or where they went to. Like, I really like going to Eugene for a few days. I would not move back to Eugene. I'm sure you enjoyed your time in State College. I've never heard you say, you know, I might just move back to State College. I haven't heard you say that.
Maybe I have not said that yet. Still pondering, but have not said
still
that.
Still pondering. So I never really fully subscribed. Like, people want to get back to where they grew up or spent a lot of years. It's not always the greatest thing. But in terms of James Franklin, I think there is the thing, perhaps, that he is a Pennsylvania guy. That seems like it's the case. And also, as good as he made Vandy, it was a resume builder. It wasn't a resume destination because the reality is it's a job with a ceiling. And Stanford has succeeded on a level that I don't think Vandy ever can in the SEC just because of the competition. Stanford is not competing with schools spending that much money like SEC schools are on recruiting, on facilities, on stadiums, on everything to attract recruits and become a winning program. Vanderbilt improved a ton, improved their facilities, took that program to 2, 3, 4 new levels, whatever the case may be, and built it into a consistent winning program. But Vandy just wasn't going to become a year in and year out 10-2, 11-1 program. That was a reality. And so the writing was on the wall. I'm sure it wasn't easy for James Franklin to leave Nashville building something like he did. But these are football coaches. These are not people that settled and stay somewhere for 80 years.
No.
They're ambitious.
Yeah, very ambitious. And
they want to win on the highest possible level, on the biggest possible stage, because they work 22 hours a day to do so.
Well, Franklin at Penn State, I think, is a great fit. The one down point to yeah. all this is Larry Johnson.
Whose job he offered the job.
Yeah, they offered the job. So for those who aren't familiar, Larry Johnson Sr., you might remember Larry Johnson Jr. Mm-hmm. as the star running back for Penn State, went on yep. to play in the NFL for the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Larry Johnson Sr. has been a defensive assistant coach on the Penn State staff for about 18 years. He's been there forever, through the thick and thin, a rock star recruiter, a true asset to have on that staff. I don't know what the circumstances were. There was news that came out before James Franklin reportedly offered him the gig to stay on as defensive line coach. There were rumors that came out that LJ was done
right.
at Penn State, that it was time to move on. He was either going to retire or do something else or who knows what. Then reportedly, Franklin offers him the job. Johnson turns it down and now has agreed to take the same position, defensive line coach,
right.
at Ohio State. That mm-hmm. is a shot across the bow Ooh. At Penn State, because LJ Sr. has been, again, terrific at recruiting the Mid-Atlantic region into mm-hmm. Ohio. He's been very integral in pulling in a lot of the top talent that Penn State has gotten over the years. To send him now over to Columbus and give Ohio State the benefit of his services
yeah.
is certainly not something Penn State fans are going to forget. I think James Franklin's going to be fine. You heard mm-hmm. him say in his press conference that the recruiting plan is to dominate the state and dominate the region,
yep.
which of course got folks all jazzed up here in Penn State country. You like yeah. to hear that. It does hurt, though, to lose LJ Sr. to Ohio State, because now they get not only a great coach, but an asset in the recruiting game as well.
Yeah, very much from the outside. It's a little bit understandable when you have the consistency of the era that he was a part of under Joe Paterno. And then you have all of the dramatic awfulness, and you know, you move on to Bill O'Brien, and Bill O'Brien starts succeeding and building confidence, but after a couple of years he accepts the opportunity to coach in the NFL, and it's just for somebody used to that kind of consistency, the turnover seems like, you know, if there were ever a time, if he still wanted to coach, he's not the youngest coach on the block, if there were ever a time to continue his career at a major place, to go to Ohio State to recruit areas that he has more experience than any coach in the region, as a defensive line coach anyway, recruiting, it's a hard opportunity to pass up. Maybe he had grown disenfranchised, disenchanted with the Penn State process.
Yep.
Probably another guy who, you know, just could use a fresh break from state college. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing given all that happened. Hard to blame him. Yeah.
Maybe he wanted the head gig. Who knows what he wanted? You don't.
Yeah,
know.
And I mean, that's not knows. Unreasonable either.
No, well, you've been in one place for that long.
Right.
I know this just from working at corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feel like you're going anywhere, it can become pretty easy to get disenfranchised.
Yeah.
Sort of the way it works. So wish him well. I'm sure he'll do wonderful things at Ohio State. The other head coaching tidbit that we must discuss, and
sure.
I'm sorry it took this long, the savior... The savior has returned to Louisville, Kentucky.
Papa
in an
John.
Extremely bizarre move.
Yeah.
Something that only could happen with Bobby Petrino.
Yeah.
Bobby Petrino is now right. Bobby Petrino is now back in Louisville as head football coach. He gets a $3.5 million mm-hmm. salary. You joked that he had about a $790 million buyout.
Yeah.
It's only $10 million. It decreases after 4 years. There's no doubt that the folks at Louisville, I think, got a little desperate with this one. It was a bit of a panic pick to rehire Petrino. He's a good coach.
Yeah.
There's no doubt he left with some bad blood.
Mm-hmm.
They claim he's rehabilitated himself. They claim he's a changed man, Dan. How much stock do you put in that?
Oh, not any. He's a college football coach. I don't really care.
No, I don't care if he's not. It's winning dad of the year. I couldn't care less. Bobby Petrino's a good football coach. He's been a good football coach for a long time. So from that standpoint, I think they got a good coach. The question is, do Louisville fans, can the institution of Louisville deal with all that baggage that comes with Bobby Petrino?
If he wins, sure. Absolutely. It's a value buy, to be sure, as well. It's in no world would Louisville have gotten a coach who has the sort of career accomplishments, scattered and weird as they may be, but, you know, succeeding in the SEC West and then going to Louisville, you wouldn't really see that. But, you know, the unfortunate track that Bobby Petrino has taken to get back to Louisville, he is the only coach, and I think this was an Andy Staples line, who has already proven that he can win at his new job. He is the only one that can say that. His buyout is pretty significant. I think they'll have him for a while at least, unless I don't feel like the NFL is going to come calling again. You know, maybe there's a program, you know, in a BCS level conference. We can't even use the word BCS conference anymore. I don't know what we're going to say.
Yeah.
But he's going to be there for a little while. I'm curious to see, aside from all the personal stuff and interpersonal stuff and whatever, curious to see, he's never really been at a place long enough or a big place long enough, and he helped to make Louisville a bigger place than it was when he was there, how well he can do long-term recruiting. Left the Arkansas cupboard really bare. Was only at Western Kentucky for a year. Louisville, he was there for a little while, but did not, you know, he did not leave everything stocked, to say the least, for Cragthorpe. So curious to see if he's there 6-7 years, what type of depth, what type of quarterbacks he's able to not just attract, but develop at Louisville. It's an interesting story to me, and it's almost a little bit boring, all of the Arkansas stuff. Like, I'm actually legitimately curious to see what Louisville's able to do in sustaining their recent success and what he's able to do with a number of talented kids that are still going to be playing within the John. Can we call it the John?
Sure.
The stadium? Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
I must say, though, while a lot of the Arkansas stuff is probably overplayed, there is some value in running a Google search on Bobby Petrino.
Oh,
and
sure.
Seeing the first image come up, the one with him with the skinned face and the neck brace.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that's remotely humorous about that.
Yeah, somebody. I mean, those are going to be printed out and held up at Louisville games. Those are going to be ACC printers are going to be very busy.
Yeah.
You know, God forbid Louisville's really good and they play in game day games. We're going to get great signs in the ACC this year. So, yeah.
It's interesting that his buyout goes down after 4 years, because Bobby Petrino has only had 2 4-year stints. One came at Louisville, another came at Arkansas. Otherwise, though, I'm looking at a lot of 1-year stints as assistants. I'm looking at a lot of 2 and 3-year stints as positional coaches or being a coordinator. Yep. This is a guy who has been around, to say the absolute very least. And, you know, if they're able to retain him at Louisville, there's a pretty good chance he'll do wonderful things there. He's bringing Todd Grantham over from Georgia, by the way. $1 million for Mr. Grantham to coach the defense.
God.
Some of these coordinator salaries seem to be going up dramatically. We'll talk about a few more of them here momentarily, but is Todd Grantham worth $1 million to you?
No.
That seems like a lot of money.
He's worth whatever somebody's willing to pay him.
Yeah.
Louisville's willing to pay. He was a very average SEC defensive, or slightly above average SEC East defensive coordinator. Georgia, for the talent Georgia had, granted the injuries this year were pretty severe, but the Georgia defense these past few years, who have they really put a huge scare into?
They had some good talent.
Yeah, no, but a ton of NFL talent, ton of high-level NFL talent, but yeah, was never a huge fan, never, I don't know how many shows we talked about, like, wow, Georgia's going to dominate somebody on defense this week in this big game. That just wasn't a thing we talked about all that often.
No, well, he goes to Louisville, again, $1 million, that's a nice payday for Mr. Grantham. Let's take a break here. Our first sponsor this evening, Hulu Plus.
Mm.
You've heard of him before. I'm sure you've tried Hulu.com before, Dan.
The best.
Hulu Plus, though, is even better. So much more. With Hulu
Plus,
tell
me more, Ty.
You can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and movies in the living room or on the go. Maybe you're on the train.
Sure.
Maybe you're headed home tonight after a long day at the office.
Yep.
Smartphone, tablet, watch on the train. Boom.
Options.
With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows like SNL, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, and of course, a solid verbal favorite, Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Watch every episode of all these shows like Lost, Law & Order, SVU, Doctor Who, Community, you name it. There are a ton more options. You can also check out exclusive content like Hulu Originals, The Wrong Man's, Behind the Mask. Behind the Mask, actually, a new docuseries that takes you inside the world of sports mascots. You'll also get access to a collection of ad-free movies and all sorts of kids' content. That is only $7.99 a month. Again, to catch up on current shows, binge on old favorites, or catch a great movie, stream all of it as often as you want, wherever you want. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus for free for 2 weeks. All you got to do is go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. It is a special offer only for Verballers, so you got to make sure you use HuluPlus.com/verbal. And get that extended free trial. Also, it'll let them know that we sent you. Again, one more time, HuluPlus.com/verbal. You will get an extended 2-week free trial, Dan.
You know what that is, Ty?
What's that?
Hulu Plus I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's an easy call.
Ooh, company man!
Easy call. No, Hulu Plus is fantastic. I watch Colbert, Daily Show, all the time, morning after. It's fantastic.
All right. Check it out, HuluPlus.com/verbal. We were getting into some coordinator talk. Mentioned Todd Grantham going to Louisville for $1 million. The carousel. We always call it the coaching carousel. I know the video game, the last video game about college football ever made over the last couple seasons has casually referred to it as the coaching carousel. It very much is a carousel. One guy leaves a position open. They have to find someone to backfill it. And we saw that go on a little bit more with higher profile coordinators in Southern schools, places accustomed to winning. The first was Doug Nussmeier from Alabama. The 43-year-old guy came over from Washington, leaves to go to Michigan. He's getting $850,000 a year. It's an interesting move. I'm curious to see what he does with Devin Gardner. Curious to see what kind of offense he runs up there, if he can get it in better working order than Al Borges. It is a different kind of challenge for Nussmeier now moving north, but Michigan gets themselves probably one of the top five most preeminent offensive coordinators in the game of college football, and they get it for a price tag of $850,000.
Yeah, I was surprised by this.
Me too.
Alabama can pay anybody what they want, essentially. They have all the money in the world, and I don't know if it was a result of this season and being disappointed with the offense, that it was a mutual parting of ways. But typically you don't see, because, you know, we've seen coordinators go on for, you know, from these huge schools to become head coaches. And he was in a terrific spot. Kirby Smart has been rumored for all these years. Jeremy Pruitt, of course, takes the Florida State job and goes over to Georgia. Put yourself in a high profile position to take over, whether you're just an assistant or a coordinator. But at best, it's a lateral move and getting more money. Maybe he just did not like the South. I have no idea. But it's an interesting move for Michigan. Of course, Alabama's offense, not the greatest thing on the field in their bowl game, but it's the bowl game. I don't know. Who cares?
Sure.
Curious to see, as you mentioned, because Keith Price had a fantastic year his sophomore year at Washington with Doug Nussmeier and sort of helped propel Nussmeier to Alabama and become a hot commodity there. But the big thing for Michigan with Doug Nussmeier, it's the offensive line. Taylor Lewan is gone. How well can the young guys that they've been recruiting, highly heralded guys coming in on the offensive line, how well can they run the football? Because if they did anything terribly last year, and you could make the argument that Michigan did like 14 things terribly at different points of the season, it was running the ball. It was power running. It was getting anything out of the offensive line in the running back position. So Doug Nussmeier has proven and has proven his ability to do so at both Washington and Alabama. The talent is a little bit different in Michigan than it is in Alabama.
Yeah. But
I would imagine he'll have some success coming over this early. You have full spring. You have summer to install whatever he wants to install. You know, I think the mission statement of Brady Hoke is not going to be spread and triple option, all that kind of stuff. Brady Hoke wants to play power pro style stuff, it appears. You have Devin Gardner in his final season. I think Devin Gardner improves with a year under Nussmeier and the ability that he has to develop quarterbacks. I think it's a good move. It's a bit of a curious one, but good nonetheless.
Yeah, a good move for Michigan. Let's say that. I think it's a good move for Michigan. And they certainly open up the pocketbooks to bring Nussmeier north. You did mention Jeremy Pruitt. He's an interesting case as well. Mm-hmm. He comes over from Florida State. He was the first year defensive coordinator for Florida State. Before that, he had different stints at Alabama since 2007. He was with Nick Saban for a while, came over after a year or two or three of being the Alabama defensive backs coach, coordinated a very successful, very stingy Florida State defense this past season. And then immediately got another job, got a huge raise to go up to Georgia and coordinate that defense and take over for Todd Grantham, who again left for Louisville. Is this an upgrade for Georgia? I mean, we don't have a huge sample size of what Pruitt can do. He had one great season, and he had a ton of talent. A lot of those guys are going to play in the NFL.
He had an NFL defense at Florida State with an offense that was the most efficient in the country.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to keep that in mind, but... with all that said, is this an upgrade for Georgia? They've been crying for a while to get rid of Todd Grantham.
Yeah, they've grown sort of sick of him. He is definitely an upgrade. And when you talk to Florida State people, they've had NFL players and NFL caliber talent on that defense for a number of years, but didn't get the type of results that they had this year, those other years. And that is in large part to Jeremy Pruitt bringing over a number of the principals that worked at Alabama. And a number of those principals, if you talk to Bud Elliott, and trust me, Bud Elliott's willing to talk to anybody about Florida State.
Bud Elliott has not slept since January 7th.
No, not at all. So he raved on and on about how well Pruitt, especially and not surprisingly with the defensive backs, was able to install a really advanced system and work really well in concert with Sal Sunseri, who of course came over from Alabama and then Tennessee to coach the linebackers at Florida State. So they had a terrific staff, a terrific defensive line, talent everywhere. LaMarcus Joyner was fantastic. You know, talent obviously everywhere, but he got the most out of that talent. And Georgia is another school that should be able to attract and develop high-level SEC talent that Pruitt should be able to get the most out of. I think it's a definite upgrade. I'm curious. I don't have the list of defensive assistants off the top of my head. I know they lost their defensive line coach. Georgia did last year to Auburn, and that clearly made a difference. And I believe his name is Rodney Gardner. But with Jeremy Pruitt in Georgia, I would expect an upgrade. I would expect a spike. The sort of Jeremy Pruitt effect combined with all of our players aren't terribly World War I wounded.
Yeah.
Effect. I think you should see a very nice spike, much in the same way that Jeremy Pruitt's salary spiked as he made his move to Athens.
And with all this coordinator talk, We'd be remiss, of course, if we did not mention the one that clearly spawned the most jokes on the Twitter sphere. Mr. Lane Kiffin.
Who?
Mr. Lane Kiffin, Mr. Softy himself.
Yeah.
Gives us another year's worth of being able to play the song.
Yep.
He lands at Alabama, you know, the second Doug Musmeyer left for Michigan. Folks were starting to talk about it on Twitter. I saw Jeremy Fowler from CBS. I saw Bruce Feldman from CBS. Saw a few others saying, maybe this means Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's going to happen, but it could. It maybe just opens the door just a little bit.
Yeah. Whatever the case was with Lane Kiffin coming in as a special offensive assistant during December before bowl time, whatever that was, you know, Nick Saban was impressed. And the jokes are very easy. And
oh, they're so easy, Dan.
I think as an offensive coordinator, Lane Kiffin, you know, he drew the ire of USC some, but you're talking about, and, you know, the Matt Leinart era, you're talking about John David Booty, talented quarterbacks, perhaps not great on the next level and being unlucky at the next level, whatever the case, but he put together top offenses. Even 2 years ago with Matt Barkley, with a healthy Robert Woods and Marquise Lee, that USC offense with the type of not even depth that Alabama has, but top talent, there's proof that Lane Kiffin can run a good offense. And now that he doesn't have to worry about anything other than game planning and play calling, you're in a pretty good place if you're Alabama and you're Lane Kiffin. I don't know how well he's going to do. I don't know if, you know, the fit is right, the cultural fit, whatever, going back to the SEC, but I think you're not taking a ton of chances with Lane Kiffin there.
Well, Nick Saban
himself,
he's
not talking to anybody. He's not recruiting like he recruited at USC.
Nick Saban himself made a comment about, we know Lane Kiffin has some limitations.
Yeah.
We're not asking him to do any of that.
Right.
All he's coming in here to do is coach the offense. Now, it seems to be fairly split down the middle, at least if you look out on social media. A lot of folks making the obvious jokes. I was one of them. You were one of them. I mean, we're going to have fun with this. There's no doubt about it. The fact remains that Kiffin historically has been a half-decent offensive coach. This will be his chance, though, to really show what he's made out of, because he is now offensive coordinator by himself. He doesn't have Steve Sarkisian to help him. He is the offensive coordinator at Alabama. He's going to have a ton of talent. We saw what the likes of Derrick Henry can do. He's obviously got TJ Yeldon around for another year. Running the football should not be an issue.
Right.
He's got a new quarterback coming in. He will have his own degree of challenges down in Tuscaloosa that'll prove what he's worth. So ultimately, not the worst move that Nick Saban could make, and when you and I talked about it, it does have a bit of a Bill Belichick feel to it, where you could almost give anything to Bill Belichick, it'll find a way to spin it into gold.
Scrap heap.
Sure.
He's got a metal yard, metal shop.
Nick Saban has done that before, and in all likelihood will do that again with Lane Kiffin. It's just the jokes are so easy right now. It's hard to just be able to turn your back on something so easy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's win-win. I mean, if he does well, he does well, and Alabama is fun to watch, or probably not fun to watch, but people like Derrick Henry and TJ Yeldon will make for some fun football. And if he does poorly, we all get to watch Alabama melt down about Lane Kiffin. That's amazing. So I'm all for it either way.
All right. Second sponsor this evening, LegalZoom.com. Some things,
so
Daniel,
enthusiasm.
Like starting a business, protecting your family with a will. These aren't things like other New Year's resolutions. You can't afford to blow these things off.
Absolutely.
Instead of, you know, saying you're not going to snack as much or saying you're going to exercise, put LegalZoom at the top of your list. They'll help you incorporate or form an LLC just like we did. Mm-hmm. They've got a simple questionnaire. It all starts at just $99. Over 1 million entrepreneurs have done it, and 90% of customers recommend LegalZoom to friends and family. You can also create a will. Starts at just $69.
It's a very sensitive tone you're taking right now. Create a will.
Well, this is something important, I think, that the people need to know.
Be realistic. We have very few Highlanders in our audience.
$69.
To live forever.
To create that will, or even a living trust, whatever suits your fancy. You can do it quickly and easily, get peace of mind and protection. There are no surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches at all. LegalZoom has a step-by-step process It was created by a team of experts in law and technology, but LegalZoom is not a law firm.
Not a law firm.
Not a law firm. Important to give that disclaimer. They can connect you with a third-party attorney and provide self-help services, but they're not a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
Go there, LegalZoom.com, for wills, business formations, trademarks, powers of attorney, much, much more. Again, LegalZoom.com. If you want even more savings than usual, type in verbal, V-E-R-B-A-L, into the referral box at checkout. Don't put this off, Daniel. I'm telling you. If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. Go to LegalZoom.
I do lead a pretty rock and roll lifestyle, Ty.
LegalZoom.com now. Use a discount code of verbal. That is LegalZoom.com. Your discount code is verbal, V-E-R-B-A-L.
Who do you think the fine folks at LegalZoom went to incorporate LegalZoom, though?
Ooh.
That's what I ask you now. Pew.
Maybe they were their own first project.
Well, it's pretty incestuous. Pretty weird.
I'm going to have to get...
Just marinate on that. Let that stew.
We're going to have to get LegalZoom on the horn and find out about that.
Answers.
Yeah, we demand answers here on the show. What else? Two other ones. Coordinators.
Yes.
Mike Denbrock.
Oh, my God. Denbrock?
You got it. Promoted to offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Okay. Fear not if you don't know the name. Denbrock was promoted from within. Brian Kelly calling the plays next year. Denbrock's going to help. He's still the offensive coordinator. Brian Kelly going to be calling the plays. This isn't a huge difference from what we've seen in the first couple seasons under Brian Kelly. Last year, actually the only year where Kelly didn't call the plays himself, he had delegated that to Chuck Martin, who, of course, is now with Miami of Ohio. So Kelly back to calling the plays. Mike Denbrock is now officially your offensive coordinator. Not a huge breaking story. I did want to ask you about this one, though. Don Pelham promoted at Oregon. He's a longtime Oregon assistant, graduated from Oregon back in the early 80s, been with the program for 20-plus years. He is promoted now from within to replace the now retired Nick Aliotti. Do you like the move? Where do you stand on Mr. Pelham?
I'm not sure where I'm standing. I'm staying on uneven ground when I think about Don Pelham as the Oregon defensive coordinator. With certainty, he either becomes the best or one of the two or three best dressed defensive coordinators
in
college football. Best dressed. He is a sharp, sharp dresser. I was a little bit meh on the hire just because I really hadn't heard his name. Not that I have my specific ear to the ground all that much with Oregon defensive hires and people trying to recruit Oregon defensive coaches year in and year out, but he seemed like one of those lifers, very much like a Larry Johnson type, where you're like, wow, that guy is a mainstay. That guy does his job really well. That guy's a good recruiter. That guy is a great face for this program. And is, you know, the Oregon program as a whole, one of the reasons why they've done so well for so long recently is the continuity among that coaching staff. Chip Kelly kept him on. He's done a great job. The defense has been very good. The thing that was a little bit troubling was he's never been a defensive coordinator, which isn't a huge deal because guys have succeeded. I mean, we just talked about Jeremy Pruitt, who went from a defensive backs coach to the best defensive coordinator in the country last year.
Sure.
It's just he didn't seem to fit the role. And as we go to this new era of Mark Helfrich and the new era of Oregon football, it just seemed like if there was going to be a new stamp on this program, the Oregon defense was good this year, not great. It took a couple steps back in their big games, at least against Stanford and Arizona. Arizona, the defense was dreadful. And the huge part of the reason that game was dreadful was the linebackers. But one game certainly does not make or break a career as bad as that Arizona game was. So I've grown increasingly warm about, that sounds weird, but I'm going to stand by it, increasingly warm about the hire, but it's not an exciting hire when you look at perhaps an up-and-coming defensive coordinator from the Mountain West or within the Pac-12, you know, Clancy Pendergast. I don't know what his interest or Oregon's interest was, but you like the fresh eyes. Perhaps Oregon had gotten a little bit stale on defense and needed new blood, and Don Pelham certainly is not that. But there should still be continuity. I think a big thing is John Neal is staying, the defensive backs coach, who's very highly regarded and has produced a ton of NFL talent and recruited the defensive back position very well. I think the defensive line coach, Ron Aiken, is sticking around, and they're bringing in to take over the linebackers, at least the outside linebackers, a Chip Kelly guy that he took with him to Philadelphia. his name is like Eric Chenander or something like that, who recruited really well for Oregon when he was there was highly regarded as a defensive coach, as a grad assistant at Oregon. So I'm warming up to the idea. I'm not necessarily the most optimistic person just because it's such an unknown, but we'll see.
We will see indeed. Don Pelham.
He doesn't have a name like a water polo player from Newport Beach like Mike Denbrock does, but
right.
It'll have to suffice. Mike Denbrock. Mike Denbrock. Such a cool guy.
Yeah.
Mike Denbrock. He's probably taking Taylor to the prom. Mike Denbrock. Man, what a life that guy must lead.
On that note, do we got some time? Let's read like two or three emails. We think.
Yeah, let's go through emails. Actually, before the emails, I want to do something pretty lightning with you. And I want you to, because.
Do you want the lightning sound?
Also, yeah, give me some lightning.
Go ahead.
I think it's a record-setting year of NFL declarations by underclassmen.
Oh, 93 at last count?
Yeah, and it was something like 75 was the record before. And now it's just been burned to the ground, that record. But I want you to stop me. And I will stop myself if you have anything to say about any of these names, just because there have been 10 to 15 declarations since the national championship, it seemed, every day.
Yeah.
Devontae Adams, the terrific receiver from Fresno State, gone. Jason Morrow, great tight end from Texas Tech, should be one of the best two in the draft, gone. George Atkinson, gone. Are you okay with that? Is that funny to you?
I'm both okay with it and humored by it.
Okay.
Is he going to be? I mean, I guess he could be a kick return man. He couldn't break a tackle at Notre Dame, so it's
specialty player.
It's a dubious move, but we wish him well.
Yes. Deion Bailey, the safety from USC, gone. Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, both gone from LSU.
I won't offer anything about them specifically.
Right.
I will say that based on the names I've seen, it looks like a ridiculously deep receiver draft this year.
Oh, so deep.
It's a really deep draft. Not just at receiver. I mean, this might be the best draft in years. But receiver seems particularly stocked.
Yeah, running back looks also pretty nice. You have Bortles gone. So I have said my own Bortles can no longer do it anymore as it relates to college football. Carl Bradford, a bit of a surprise, a really good pass rusher, outside linebacker, defensive end for Arizona State, gone. Bridgewater, of course, gone. Martavis Bryant, bit of a surprise, a lot more raw, I think, than Sammy Watkins.
Some people think he could be better than Watkins once he fully develops.
May have more raw talent than Sammy Watkins, a bit of a head case, it seems. Kadeem Carey, best running back in the country last year. Sorry, Andre Williams, Kadeem Carey was the best running back in the country, gone. Ha-ha Clinton Dix might be the best safety in the draft. That Alabama secondary gets a lot less experience with both him and Sunseri declaring.
Yeah.
Clowney, no surprise there. Brandon Cooks from Oregon State, fun receiver to watch. Small, fast, should be really good for somebody in the slot at the next level. Scott Crichton, defensive end, Oregon State, gone. Inconsistent, but very good, I believe. He had not a record-setting career, but he had a very good career at Oregon State. Isaiah Crowell, Alabama State.
Still kicking, huh?
Still kicking. Literally, figuratively, whatever the case may be. He's gone, perhaps, maybe a fine value for somebody undrafted.
He was the one with the Bulldog.
Yes, he was the one with the Bulldog.
Yeah.
Coney Ealy from Missouri.
Yep.
Kind of a freak coming off the edge. Really, really good. Will be interesting to see. Missouri's sort of retooled at certain spots along that front seven, their defense without him. Dominic Easley, who was by far the best player for Florida, at least up front this past year with all their injuries until he himself got hurt. Bruce Ellington, South Carolina, probably their most consistent receiver. Could be wrong about that. Eric Ebron, I'm still at the ease. I'm going to go faster. Mike Evans, not a huge surprise. Texas A&M, they are stocked with receivers.
Yep.
They'll miss him. They'll miss Johnny Manziel. But there's a lot of talent.
They
that's sort
will
of
be quite
incoming.
All right.
Yes. Ego Ferguson and I believe Booger Johnson, both defensive tackles for LSU, both gone.
I mean, I got to laugh at anyone named Booger. Continue.
Booger. Yeah, Anthony Johnson. But we'll go Booger. We have Devonta Freeman, starting running back.
Yep.
Very versatile, all-purpose back for Florida State.
A
very good
decision.
On those screens.
Good decision for him to go pro.
Yeah, Jeremy Hill. LSU guys are going to miss him. LSU is getting the best running back in a long time coming out of high school and Leonard Fournette.
They're going to be just fine.
The nice replacement there. Adrian Hubbard, I would say an underrated linebacker for Alabama, gone. Everybody that's eligible and at least decent on Cal as a junior, gone.
Not going down with that ship.
No, Storm Johnson, UCF gone. His stock is pretty high right now. Our boy, sad to see him go. Really hope he has a long, healthy NFL career. Henry Josey,
yeah,
running back, Missouri. Cyrus Kwanjo, highly regarded, committed to Auburn, then went to Alabama. Got torched in his last game as a member of the Crimson Tide, the left tackle for Alabama. Should probably still be taken pretty high. DeMarcus Lawrence, really underrated national defensive end for Boise State. Really liked watching him play. Marquise Lee, no big surprise there. Took a step back. Wasn't just the injuries for the USC receiver.
Going first
dumb
round
drops.
Of the Jets.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. They need
and
a receiver.
And will disappoint.
Yeah, maybe.
Colt Lyerla, he'll either be Von Tisberfect with more baggage and go undrafted and make somebody really happy, or he'll just be out of the NFL in 3 months. Yeah. Aaron Lynch, USF transfer from Notre Dame, all the talent in the world. Didn't have a great 2013, but you know,
a lot of talent there. A lot of talent.
Johnny Manziel, that was recent, will be the talk. If you turn on ESPN between
May, he's the new Tebow now.
Holy hell.
Oh my God. Mel Kiper, for those who have been disconnected from the web all day.
Yep.
Disconnected from your sports news all day.
Yep.
Mel Kiper released a mock draft on ESPN Insider. He's got Johnny Manziel going one overall. Now, Dan and I were talking before we hit the record button to whether or not ESPN just flat out paid off Kiper to do this so they'd have a news story to discuss. Kiper was very deliberate in his mock draft, in the writing to say that, well, I don't have the official measurements, so this could change. And I did this purely based on need, not based on anything I'm hearing about who teams like or where they might go draft-wise in terms of trades and the like. But to put him at one just gave them like a week's worth of news. So if you don't like Johnny Manziel, now might be a good time to check out Fox Sports 1. Just throwing it out there.
Or just go back and listen to the Solid Verbal.
Yeah, well, that too.
Yeah, Marcus Martin, center for USC. That offensive line becomes pretty thin for USC. Trey Mason announced a little bit. The running back, of course, with an outstanding national championship.
Good move for him.
Fantastic year.
Yeah, good move for him.
Terrence Mitchell, the Oregon corner, who got a little bit less attention than the guy on the other side of the field, Ifo Ekpre-Olomu, but certainly was as locked down, if not even a little bit more locked down, just didn't have the sort of raw numbers that Ifo did. He's gone. Tiny Moala, we mentioned the Cal players, highly regarded coming out of high school, should be a nose tackle for somebody in the NFL. Dante Moncrief, who Ole Miss will miss.
Are you reading all 90 of these?
I'm not reading all 90. I'm trying to skip the ones that don't mean any that much to me, but
okay.
Yeah, Tiny Moala probably should have skipped.
His name's Tiny, though. It's all right.
Yeah, Viliami, but they call him Tiny. Lewis Nix, of course, Irish chocolate.
Sure.
Will be missed. Troy Nicholas.
That was a bit of a surprise. A bit of a surprise there, to be honest with you, but they're okay at tight end. You lose a guy like Nicholas, a big guy, someone who came in, was able to contribute in a big way this year. It will hurt to lose him, but they have done wonderful things at the tight end position over the last 5 years. They had no trouble recruiting tight ends. I think they'll be just fine.
Yep, Luchez Purifoy and Marcus Roberson, the corners for Florida, are both gone. They will be missed. Paul Richardson, hope he stays healthy. He's a very good receiver. He's gonna be a steal for somebody in like the third or fourth round. He is a really good receiver, but does have that torn ACL from a couple of years ago on his resume. Allen Robinson, another member of that deep receiver
class
that you
mentioned. A-Rob,
Yep. Bishop Sankey, another outstanding running back. He sort of leaves from, not sort of, he definitely leaves from Washington. Lake Seastrunk. It's a nice running back class. Austin Safarian Jenkins could be the first tight end, probably like the second or third tight end off the board. Ryan Shazier has a fantastic career at Ohio State. I'm going to take a breath. Xavier Suofilo, the best part of a UCLA offensive line that was pretty inconsistent, pretty inexperienced. He's really good and is actually a first-round talent, and UCLA will miss him. Brett Hundley, of course, decides to come back, does not have his best offensive lineman. Mentioned Vinny Sanseri. D'Anthony Thomas will be a specialty player, was not a starter in the traditional sense for Oregon. They will miss the explosion, but I think it was best for everybody.
Sure.
I think it was best. Stephon Tuitt, gone for Notre Dame.
Decided to go.
You were unsure when we talked about that before.
He said he was staying, and then
he
undid it, and that's fine.
He undid it. Sammy Watkins, I think the pretty clear best receiver in this draft.
Yep.
Big George Uko for Southern California, the USC. He leaves. Their defensive line is going to be a bit thin with graduating guys and declaring guys. David Yankee, Stanford's best offensive lineman. They've restocked that really, really well. If I didn't mention somebody's name, they either haven't declared yet. Actually, I think today was the last day, right?
I feel bad for the guys who last year decided to stick around for their senior year. And now it's like, son of a bah.
Yeah.
90 some underclassmen coming out. Just a huge wave of younger players, a lot of really high end players.
Right.
Potentially first round talents. A good year to be drafting, a good year to be picking if you need to stock up.
Ed Reynolds is gone. It's another Ed Stanford Reynolds is defensive gone, back. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So Ed Reynolds gone, their best safety. So if we didn't mention their names, there are a number of names, I think, highlighted probably by Marcus Mariota and anybody, I don't know who else, Brett Hundley, that decided to come back, even though they were, you know, Braxton Miller decided to come back, that were eligible and certainly would have been drafted at the in the first half of the draft that should make next season. You know what? Okay, I'm happy about Marcus Mariota. It's obvious why I'm happy. You know who I'm really happy to see come back?
Who's that?
Melvin Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really excited for Mel VG.
He probably made himself some money by staying, provided he doesn't get hurt. Because, as we've discussed, a ton of talent out there. Where would Melvin Gordon fit in? I mean, this was really the first year we really got to see a lot of Melvin Gordon. So,
yep.
Give the scouts a bigger sample size and maybe get paid a little bit more next year when it comes time for the draft.
Yeah. No, there's a number of Quandre Diggs coming back to Texas, I think was a very smart move of him after Texas's reputation sort of took a tank, has a chance to prove himself once again as a shutdown corner this year. So, yeah, all sorts of players that made smart decisions as well. Amir Abdullah is going to be really fun to watch next year.
Potential Heisman dark horse right there.
Absolutely.
Amir
Abdullah.
Hold
on to the ball, Amir Abdullah.
Absolutely. I was looking at some scouting profiles for Tommy Rees as well.
Mm-hmm.
He is on NFLDraftScout.com. It's been fun to read.
Really? Oh, I thought it would have been for like Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Oh, no.
Is scouting him as a potential employee.
No, they have him on here.
Okay.
If you're interested in a good read, they've got him rated 38th out of 156 quarterbacks.
Who's 39 and 40 if you have it in front of you?
I don't have that in front of me, but 38. So.
All right.
There you go. All right, let's get to, we got time for two emails here. You want to do that?
Sorry.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
All right, as often as we can, we do our best to pay homage to those of you who write into solidverbal@gmail.com. That's still the email address. This one comes to us from Cole. This guy.
I should add that I almost fell out of the chair.
Are you all right over there?
I am all right. As you were playing that, I took the chance to sort of stretch my back as I was leaning forward and reading those names and almost fell backwards and split.
Potentially
my head
our first injury accident while recording the Solid Verbal. It did not occur in the hot tub, which is a bit surprising.
No electrocutions in the hot tub.
It could have happened. Nothing. For those who haven't seen the setup.
Right.
There were electrical outlets very close to that hot tub. It could have happened.
Yeah, there was a lot of electricity, a lot of extension cords.
Yeah.
And we had been drinking. Let's be honest.
All right, Cole. Guys, been listening to the show for about a year. Best college football podcast out there. Thank you, Cole.
Yes!
Don't know if it's been mentioned before, but why is Notre Dame Ty's team? I'm from Canada, and I'm finding it real hard to be partial to a team from up here in the Great North. So, two subjects worth discussing here. First, why is my team Notre Dame? I won't go into the full details. Was raised in Eastern Pennsylvania to a staunch Catholic Italian family.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of raised.
The Notre Dame fighting Italians.
Of course.
Makes perfect sense.
I was raised from the get-go to be a Notre Dame fan. I don't know whose influence it was. Might have been my grandmother, might have been my grandfather, but one of them decided Notre Dame was the team, and I just sort of stuck with it. Now, full disclosure, growing up, I rooted very hard against the Penn State Nittany Lions.
And now?
And hold on, I'm getting to now.
Okay, sorry.
I end up going to school at Penn State.
What?
While I was there, I actually rooted a little bit less, but I still rooted against Penn State.
Come on now.
It wasn't logical, and I apologize. Penn State people have been very kind. They've welcomed me with open arms.
Good.
After graduating, I have buried the hatchet with Penn State. I am all in on Penn State. I am double all in on James Franklin. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not going to name an alpha team. Notre Dame's still probably the alpha team. If Notre Dame's 1A, Penn State's 1B.
Well, Penn State doesn't upset you like Notre Dame upsets you. So, I think that's the clear sign.
I've done bodily harm to myself during Notre Dame games. We're not at that point yet with Penn State, but it could happen.
Right. I don't know if I said that backwards, but yes, that's what
fair enough. I think people understand the gist.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a Notre Dame fan. I just sort of grew up rooting for Notre Dame, and I've maintained it throughout my life. The second point, though, here in the email, and we've gotten these before from people who aren't from the United States, he says, I'm from Canada. I'm finding it real hard to be partial to a team from up here in the Great North. Now, the man's name is Cole Daniel. I want to get people to email us in and specify what team Cole should root for. We've done it before. I want people to email in. The best email we'll get, the best emails, let's say, will get read aloud on the air. We need justification for a Canadian in the Great North. Who should he root for? SolidVerbal@gmail.com.
See, I'm a bad person. I think you're probably a bad person, maybe not as bad as I am, to ask, because I've thoroughly enjoyed just watching football, just watching good games and just surfing and putting on a bunch of screens. And it's, you know, part of my job here and part of my job for my day job. But I don't know if you need a team. If you don't have a team, if you're not locked into the joy and misery and obsession of being a Florida State, Maryland, Cal, Texas Tech, whatever the case, if you're not locked into that, it's fun to rise and fall with a team, but just planning yourself on Saturdays and eating something terrible, it's not a bad life. It's just enjoying good games and good players and weird situations and the madness of college football. I'm almost jealous of his ability to do that in earnest.
Yeah.
So I would consider that. But yeah, if you need a team, we're going to have people email and talk about who you should root for. Make it somebody entertaining that, you know, has a stadium you like looking at, a mascot you like looking at, cheerleaders you like looking at. Make it look at it as an entertainment enterprise and not strictly I need to follow the recruiting and buy a bunch of
I'm not looking at the logic in these emails that I know we're going to get. I'm looking for some entertainment.
Yes.
Amuse me, and then I'll read it for Colin.
I think the answer is Lafayette.
Lafayette? Is Lehigh? Yeah. All right, another one here. This one, well, our last one of the day. Then I guess we could do a secret verbal. What the hell?
Ooh.
Curtis from Greensboro, North Carolina, also of 80minutesofregulation.com.
Mm-hmm.
He says, guys, this may or may not be of any interest to you, but I had two freaky solid verbal related coincidences occur. I am still listening to the BCS shows. Mm-hmm. Y'all produced a lot of material for my 20-minute commute.
Yes.
That we did, Curtis. We apologize. Yep. On my way in, I passed a local Lomax property sign just as you were discussing the last name from Weekend at Bernie's.
Yep.
On the way home, you were setting up an Avril Lavigne question with Lindsay Theory.
Yeah, who is terrible at trivia.
Really bad at trivia.
Really bad. Very good at what she does covering USC. Very nice person, friend of the show. Terrible at trivia.
You guys were reciting the lyrics to Complicated, again from Avril Lavigne. I had just picked up my 2-year-old daughter from daycare, and she requested I turn on music, and what should be on the local pop station but that very song?
Yeah.
He titled this email Solid Paranormal, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more to this
email.
It is a little bit weird.
Okay.
It's just sort of an odd symmetry between Curtis and the Solid Verbal. He's calling it the Solid Paranormal here.
How do you feel about Avril Lavigne? Here's a bit of background behind that question.
Go ahead.
We had a number of long drives in Los Angeles. That's one of the downsides of spending a lot of time in Southern California, a very sunny place, beautiful people, beautiful weather.
Yeah.
A lot of things to do. You're in your car a lot.
Yeah.
And so as we were shuttling back and forth between my parents' house and Newport Beach, where the media hotel was, then going into LA to just eat and hang out and do whatever, it was you and me, and a lot of the times it was Ryan Hot Tub, Celebrity Hot Tub on the Twitters. We were trying to figure out if we were all for, against, somewhere in between. We were figuring out our collective stances on a number of pop artists of the past 15 to 20 years.
If we would have recorded those podcasts, they each would have pulled down about 100,000 downloads.
A lot of hot Kelly Clarkson takes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of hot Pink takes. A lot of
Taylor Swift. We ran Taylor the gamut. Pitbull, the full gamut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
Avril Lavigne, because we did ask that question, and it is the end of the episode, which we've already talked about enough college football. Yeah. you are somebody that listens to a lot more pop radio, not because I'm any sort of better and more indie person than you are, but because you drive and I don't. So you have radio access. What is your stance on her when you look back at the catalog
right, of
Miss Levine?
Got to look at the catalog. Now, wasn't she once dating Chad Kroeger from Nickelback?
Married. Is now married.
Oh, she's married to him?
She was married to the guy from Sum 41, Derek.
That's right.
Now married to the Nickelback guy.
Wow.
Yeah. Canadian pop power couple.
We should ask our Canadian friend what he thinks of Avril Lavigne.
That's true. His name Cole?
Yeah. I'm out on Avril.
I'm out on Avril.
Yeah, I mean, if I look back on the catalog, Complicated and Skater Boy were really the only two tracks that did anything for me. Her new song, I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
Her new song does not even classify as music.
Haven't heard it.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't even remember what it's called, but I heard it on the radio and switched it off.
What about, hey, you?
That's okay. But my point is, you know, she's like 33 at this point, and she's still talking about giving people middle fingers in the bar.
Yeah.
You know, like, at some point, you got to get past that, Avril. So I'm out on Avril Lavigne.
The
better question is whether she's good looking or not. I've gotten into that discussion before.
And what do you think?
I don't know. Without all the goth looking type stuff, maybe.
She's like a pop music Laura Linney.
I don't know if I can accurately
Hillary Swank.
Yeah, I don't know if I can accurately determine whether she is or isn't.
Yeah, I think she's good looking. She's really small and she looks really young, which sort of annoys me. But yeah, I think you're right on about the you gotta start acting. You can't, you know, with the flipping off the camera and the wearing the schoolgirl clothes. Like, you know what a W4 is.
Right.
You're old enough to know these things. You do not need to be acting like you're 19.
She's 29. Okay, she's not 33. But you
even
get the
still,
point.
You're 29. You know. You're staring down the barrel of 30. You know what's what at this point. And it just
the middle finger thing is not, you're not impressing anybody at this point. You know.
It's time to evolve, Avril.
All right. Wow. Secret Verbal. We're over an hour into this now.
Yes.
Our reunion show, again, solidverbal@gmail.com. Big thanks to our two sponsors this evening, of course, HuluPlus.com. Go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. You'll get a 2-week free trial. Again, HuluPlus.com/verbal to check out all your favorite shows. Also, don't forget LegalZoom.com. Use verbal as your referral code at checkout to get some special savings on all sorts of legalese. Again, that is LegalZoom.com, Dan. Secret Verbal time.
Yes.
What do we got?
You want me to come up with the...
You come up with the target.
The target.
Yeah.
Okay. Have we secret verbaled Mike Hall from the Big Ten Network?
Oh, I don't think we have.
I don't feel like we have. He's been on the show a couple of times, at least two or three times. Very, very good guest. Knows his stuff. Does a terrific job with the Big Ten Network.
I believe,
a Missouri grad.
He is a Missouri grad. He won Dream Job.
He actually took down who is now a friend of mine who has done some work with SB Nation, Nick Stevens.
Yeah.
Mike Hall, Big Ten Network, which I believe is in Chicago, resident of Chicago, went to Missouri, was at ESPNU in Charlotte for a number of years, helped to launch ESPNU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Topics. I think a big comedy fan, big Seinfeld fan. I don't know if that means anything.
We could go Seinfeld with this now. A number of different things.
That's too obvious, though, maybe with him.
Too obvious?
Like the Tony Barnhart Fleetwood Mac thing. I feel like that has to be like our template.
Okay.
Or
Spelunking. Spelunking was another good one.
Absolutely.
We could stick with odd hobbies if we really wanted to.
I really like either the telling of the story thing or of the like the hobby or like the will you go... Boogie boarding. Will you go spelunking?
We could go mosh pit at the Avril Lavigne concert for Mike Hall.
I like the Avril Lavigne direction because it actually makes sense with our show today.
Sure.
What can he have done with Avril Lavigne that people want stories of? Or, you know, maybe you, me, and I know you're friends with Avril Lavigne, we go do blank.
Where is the video of you singing Avril Lavigne karaoke?
Not bad. Not bad.
Where is the video of you? Where is your dream job tryout video of you singing Avril Lavigne?
I've got it. Stories about his time as Avril Lavigne's bass player.
As the bass
in
player.
In her band.
Wow. Okay. Bass player.
Why didn't you ever tell us? Like, is it something you're hiding that you played bass in Avril Lavigne's band during the Complicated tour? Do you have stories from the road? I know it's a little bit Barnhardy, but Mike Hall playing bass for Avril Lavigne is pretty funny to me.
That works. All right. So what's his Twitter handle? Do we have it?
BTN, as in Big Ten Network. BTN Mike Hall, spelled exactly how you think it is. MikeHall. BTN Mike Hall. Any sort of questioning, like, do you know, what was Avril really like on the road?
Yeah. When you were playing bass.
So, like, basically, if you sat next to a guy on a plane who it came out that he played bass for Avril Lavigne, the kinds of questions that you would want to ask him.
I think that's fair. Avril Lavigne,
do not mention the Solid Verbal.
No, do not mention
hashtags,
us.
Anything, nothing. Do not mention us at all. Just like, wow, it's kind of a revelation. Who actually knew that Mike Hall played bass for Avril Lavigne on the Complicated Tour?
There you have it. BTN Boom. Mike Hall, it's the first secret verbal of 2014. So hopefully we'll get a nice response to this one. Again, BTN Mike Hall. Thanks again for downloading the show. So again, the plan is we're going to record the Verbies in the early part of next week.
You've heard of the Herbies.
That's right. We're going to get Jason back to do a little intro as well.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm going to work on that when we sign off here tonight. We will push the Verbies out. That will be the next show you'll hear from us. Probably latter part of next week or so. And then we'll take it from there. But again, if you would like to get in touch with us, if you would like to help Cole from the Great White North pick a team, again, the email is solidverbal@gmail.com. Feel free to hit us up on Facebook, on FanCred, and of course, on the Twitters. Dan, good to talk to you as usual.
Yes, and you as well. I miss you.
Do your best to stay warm up there in blustery New York City. In the meantime, for that guy over there in the city that never sleeps, for myself, Ty, here in good old Allentown, thanks again for tuning in, for downloading, and for hanging with us through more than an hour's worth of the show. We will see you when we see you. In the meantime, by all means, stay solid.
Peace.